And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m., we stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So we certainly encourage you to go to our guests' website, because we link to them as well on both locations while our guests' information resides on the schedule page before the air date. You can click on, usually their name is the link, and that'll take you to their website where you will get all of the information. We're not reinventing the wheel. We are a portal taking you to the places that you need to go to check out all of this great information. Today is going to be a fun program, and I'm really looking forward to this as well. Dr. Roger Teel is my guest, and his latest work is This Life is Joy, Discovering the Spiritual Laws to Life More Powerfully, Lovingly, and Happily. And This Life is Joy. I have to tell you, Doctor, I don't know what planet you're living on. But there are times.
My wife wonders too.
Exactly. Not only because of certainly the last electoral election process and campaign that we've just been through, just absolutely. Oh my! I tell you, there are times when I felt as though I was living on an alien world, because it just didn't. I didn't understand it, and we're not going there per se, but that's the kind of thing that you sit there going, scratching your head, going, "What? Are you kidding me? Really? Is this really happening?" You know, but I think that's one of the things that we're trying to find, in addition to the process we go through on this program in various interviews of helping people to find their purpose, a direction, trying to find some peaceful place. We're also trying to find that joy in life. And there are times, as described, when it's quite a challenge. How did you come to a place where you thought that this was a viable title, but even something viable that we could even achieve? I mean, in the times in which we live, doesn't seem like it's a possibility.
Well, you bring up a really powerful point, but I would add this perspective, that As an old paradigm is dying, it often flares up. It's sort of the last gasps. And I believe that we are witnessing the crumbling, the deconstruction of a whole lot of systems and paradigms. And quite often, it just like in a birth, it can be painful. You don't give up on the birth, though, because you know something beautiful is coming along. And my perspective is that we're being shown the fallacies and the weak points of a certain way of relating, a certain way of governing, a certain way of holding life and the individual. And it's necessary that this paradigm shift occurs, and that we begin to really express our humanness from another level. The potential human, the possible human, is seeking to be born. And what we get to do, and what actually stimulates the birth, is to see the absurdity of the old ways ever more clearly. That is what has prompted many people on their path to create significant shifts in their life, whether it's hitting bottom in an alcoholic's life or an addict's life, or seeing a total breakdown of a business when we were resisting change, or whatever the case may be. Sometimes the darkest moments are the prelude to the very enlightenment that we're seeking. So that's the perspective I bring to it all, and mm-hmm. I try to also maintain a bit of a sense of humor about the whole thing as well.
If you can't laugh at it, boy, you need to seek some therapy, because a lot of this is a lot of or cry. It's really important. Now, you being a spiritual leader as well as an inspirational speaker and life coach or life teacher, but you're also a minister and a pastor, correct?
Yes.
And just to give you a very brief background, I grew up, of course, born and raised Catholic. But in my broadcast career, I started out primarily working for about 15 years for a Christian radio station. And I remember over the course of that 15 years, the message changing. You know, the core was still basically the same. But the ancillary messages began to shift and adjust, in spite of the fact that even to this day, here in the 21st century, we still have some very diehard fire and brimstone philosophies that are still out there. You know, they're not going to let go of that, and they're going to certainly pass that on to whoever they can. But for the most part, it seems as though, at least, because of this is my point of reference, the Christian message, it has shifted. And you hear more about, you hear more about the joy in life, the happiness, the thriving, which is what we're looking for. And then you talk about paradigms, you know, we're looking for those new ways of living, you know, because it's obvious the old ways aren't working anymore. And so we're trying find those. So I'm curious, from your perspective, how do you go about that process of sharing with people this modified, this updated, this 21st century philosophy, when you are struggling to help them work through a lot of the old beliefs that aren't serving them anymore, that aren't working?
Well, first of all, I know from my own life and from doing this for so many years that our belief systems are showing up in our lives. Mm-hmm. They're of course generating our belief or our behaviors and our thoughts. But more than anything, we see manifested our deepest beliefs in our lives. We draw things in according to our beliefs. And I try to help people understand that vast creativity they have that nobody really ever told them about. You know, there's passages like "it is done unto you as you believe" and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we often give them lip service. But really, the universe is reflecting back to us our beliefs, our deepest core beliefs that we have accepted as so about ourselves and about life. And so we live in a trance state in some respects, I believe. We have lost touch with who we really are and are so many times living a persona, living a facade, living roles that we have already identified with, and sometimes feeling that we're a product of our problems, and we get pulled down by the fears both in our own lives and the fears that are circulating in society. And in all of this, we lose track of what life really is. So what I really try to do in this book is to invite people back to their core self, which I believe is whole and complete, and invite them into the essence of life, which actually I believe is joy. Now, what we humans do with life can be despicable. Mm. It can be painful. Mm-hmm. But the essence of life is not that. I mean, look around. Look at nature celebrating itself. Look at little kids and young animals playing, abandoned to life. No, they haven't accumulated all the trash and the debris of consciousness that we have, and they're in the flow of it. Life is a magnificent thing, and why couldn't it be that way for we human beings? But we got to get over so much of the ignorance that we've accumulated and awaken to a new dimension of self or a renewed dimension of self and a new experience of life. I'll pause here and I can go on and on, but you let me know when you want to get a word in edgewise.
Well, no problem there. By the way, the website for you folks to go to find out more about Dr. Roger Teel is rogerteel.com. That's R-O-G-E-R-T-E-E-L. Two E's in there, TEEL.com. Very easy to find, and to find out more, of course, about him and the work that he's doing, as well as his latest release having to do with joy in our lives. This Life is Joy. Again, discovering the spiritual laws to life more powerfully, lovingly, and happily. I kind of joke a little bit when I talk with folks about this aspect of happiness, and I go towards the for example, the U.S. Constitution, and in the front end it talks about how, you know, we are given life and liberty. We're given those things are ours. We can claim them. They, you know, you can't fight it, right? That's what it is. I mean, if you're talking, you're communicating, I think, therefore I am kind of thing, you have life, right? But when it comes to happiness, that's not a given. You can pursue it. That's what they tell you in the Constitution, that you can pursue it, but you can't have it. And it's almost like a carrot on a string sort of thing. And I sort of disagree in that respect, that I do believe it is possible for us to have joy and or happiness, how, if you want to phrase it, if there's a difference in that regard. So I'm curious, where, with the people that you come across, and obviously because you've written this wonderful work here, Life is Joy, where do you start with someone who is, whether you're looking at whatever it is that they happen to be focused on, economically, politically, socially, in relationship, job, whatever, and they are just, they're done. They've had enough. And we're not talking about, they're not taking themselves out of this world, but it's like they are so frustrated. They're feeling so disconnected. Where do you begin with someone like that?
I think one good place to begin is to understand that we have been programmed to think of our happiness and our fulfillment and our well-being as outside of ourselves, and that's something we must pursue and get in order to have that happiness. And so people are looking for meaning and happiness through money, through rampant consumerism, through substances, and all manner of things that we think, if we can finally get them in our life, power, status, that we'd finally be happy. And I can't tell you how many individuals I talk to and work with who have actually attained a fair degree of some of those things and find themselves no more happy than they ever were. Because that's the illusion, that's the inaccuracy of what we've bought into, is that happiness is brought to us by getting the things and the situations we want in life. That's never the case. It's nice to have our desires met in life, but that's not the key to joy, not at all. So what we have to realize is that we have trained ourselves to think of our joy as outside of ourselves. This book helps people rediscover the joy that they have always had within themselves. To rediscover a joy that can give them power, because it's not just I feel happy kind of a thing. It's a deep power. You feel a deep joy and you become more creative, you become more independent, you become more self-reliant, you have a natural vibrancy, you relate with individuals more from the heart. We need to reclaim the very essence of our being. You see, joy is a quality of being in every one of us. But if we're out of touch with it, we have then gone on to the search for happiness out there and feel totally frustrated, as you mentioned, when it falls short and we're disappointed deeply. But that life is saying, get back to who you are. There's a joy within you. Now, here's the next thing that I would say. The next thing that we need to, the bubble we need to burst of illusion, is that our worth as individuals is determined by our outcomes and by our possessions. And that's another fallacy we bought into. At some point, almost everybody, when their children get the message that you're not enough as you are, and you will receive love, more love, when you have more or have done more. And your value is in what you ever can have or what you will do. And so many individuals are coming from a deep place of inadequacy, trying to get their life to work, trying to get more of this and more of that, situate the relationships just so, make sure people don't change, which is futile, and try to keep situations in place so they can have a little bit of peace and happiness. And that never works. The reality of the case is that we bought a lie, that we were inadequate, that we are flawed and not enough. And the truth is that we are more than enough, that our very nature is whole. I mean, if God created you and me, as the cute phrase goes, God doesn't make junk. Maybe the junk is in our head and not in our soul, not in our reality.
Yeah.
And when we realize that it's nice to have good outcomes, but they don't justify us. They don't validate us. We don't need them to. All of a sudden, we take a breath and realize, wow, maybe I can just relax a little and enjoy my life.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned, of course, this aspect of finding that joy within that you've always had. It's always been there. And yes. I have to say that again, from my background and so forth, that what pops into my mind is the one passage Jesus says, you know, come unto me as little
all
children.
All you labor.
Well, yes, there's that part. Yes, there's that part. But there's the other one that says, come to me as little children.
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah. If you remember your childhood growing up and the fun you had, who knows what you would do. I mean, for me, it was, digging in the dirt and playing with my little army men or my Tonka trucks or building forts out of old wood around the yard or making tents out of my mother's Indian blankets, which she was not too happy about. But nonetheless, we would camp out overnight in our own backyard and so forth. And how much fun that was. The you were right there in that moment and there was nothing else going. You weren't thinking about the future. You weren't thinking about what happened yesterday. And it was so much fun just to do that kind of thing. And
you're hitting on it.
Yeah. And you tap into that. I mean, boom, you're there. You're there.
And remember how powerful we really were as children. I mean, maybe we weren't as sophisticated in the knowledge of the world. But if you look at the inner child, the inner child is creative. The inner child is vibrant. The inner child cries and heals quickly and doesn't let old wounds fester. The inner child is authentic and sincere and feeling. I mean, some of the greatest qualities are there, but we've walked so far away from that. Mm-hmm. But we can return because it's always who we are. It's always who we are.
You know, just a few days ago, I left the house. We live up above Santa Barbara, in the mountains above Santa Barbara. I call it the hill. And we were coming down to work, and I get down all the way down the hill, and I'm heading down the street, down State Street, towards my place of employment. And suddenly I realized, I don't have my wallet. Where's my wallet? Now, I knew exactly where it was. It was on my desk at home. When I was a kid, my pockets were usually empty unless there was some dirt or whatever in them. But there was no identification. There was nothing. You know, and that actually came to mind going, wow. Now, the next day, I did it again, only this time it was before I left the property. So I turned around and I went back and I got my wallet. Well, gee, I didn't even think that the day before I did just fine without it, you know. someone said, well, yeah, but what if you got pulled over by the police? You don't have your driver's license. Well, you know, I'll have to deal with that if that were to happen. But it's just very interesting the things that we take on. And you talk about children not being really sophisticated. And I have to wonder if we as adults are really all that sophisticated by comparison, because there they are, these kids, and they're experiencing the very thing that we've just kind of let slip away over the years. And hopefully some of us have been able to find this. And I'm curious, from your perspective, as a guy living his life, and here I am in my mid-late 50s and having a grand time living where I'm living. I'm living by the ocean, and I get out there and I get a chance every once in a while to walk in the surf and just be there and so forth. I'm just curious as to what are some of the things that maybe you have been able to bring back into your adulthood, possibly even from your childhood, that brought you and or bring you joy today?
Well, first of all, what I was fortunate enough to learn through an actual deep wounding when a relationship fell apart that I write about in the book, I learned how to open my heart. And I learned that there's a center within us, a chakra or a vortex, that can open to infinite love, and that's where we know God, and that's where our power resides, and that's where we can heal our relationship with ourselves. And so what I stumbled onto was that I could learn to love myself again by opening up to love within me, And then I could actually shift my whole perspective of who I am. And I could realize that joy is wherever I am because I bring it there. And so now the things I do, I do heart opening every day, and I have an exercise in the book for people to learn how to open their hearts. And so even if I've got what I would have thought to be a mundane routine or demanding day, you know, if I can turn the joy on through my heart, then I go through that day so easy, and I'm not as stressed or as exhausted at the end of the day, and I accomplish a whole lot more. But when I don't do that, when I don't activate and warm my heart and discover that inner joy, then it's a force. I struggle, and I deplete myself. And I find that joy is the open heart. It's an appreciation of love and of life in the moment, no matter what's going on. Even if we're in doing the things we dislike most. And so I've stopped demanding that life make me happy. Now, I know that sounds absurd, but it's a key to tremendous freedom. What if you just said to life and to others, you know, I no longer am looking to you for my happiness. You no longer bear the burden of making me happy because I have a joy within me already. I always have. I claim it. Therefore, I release you from any burden to make me happy. As you enter into a day, to say, you know, I am joy. And I release expectations that things that go on in this day need to make me happy or could steal my joy. Mm. And so it's a whole radical different approach to life. And then in the book, what I do is I take on some of the biggest problems that we face, whether it's fears or problems themselves or judgment or disease, conflicts, change, uncertainty, risks, and things like that. And I show how if we're in touch with our joy and in touch with our hearts, those things actually can be very powerful, and there can be openings into tremendous good in every one of those things. Mm-hmm. However, those things pull us under and run us and debilitate us if we don't approach them with the open heart and with our joy aflame within us. So there's a whole new way of moving through life. This joy I'm talking about is not just being oblivious to the pain in life, and there's no suggestion that we won't have pain or change or any of these things in our life. It's just like we've got something to stand on now. We've got something that'll help us move through those times. Just the other day, I was working with and supporting a lady who lost her husband, and she's done a lot of the work that I talk about in this book, and she was in deep grief, and I encouraged her to lean right into the grief because we don't want to stuff that. We want that pain to flow out. And I reminded her that her grieving was another expression of love because we only really grieve because we have first loved. And she smiled. She said, yeah, the tears are flowing, and I ache and miss him so much. And I'm trying to imagine a life without him. And she said, but you know what? I also still feel the joy of life itself. I know this is a passage, it's a season, it's an experience, but I still feel the joy of being. And so I'm not hopeless, you know, I'm not hopeless. That's the kind of joy that I write about, Richard.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up that example, because as you're sharing that, my thoughts go to my first marriage. And as badly as the ending was, in the process of the dissolution thereof, I of course also subsequently learned at that time that there's another name for it. It's called a lawsuit. I did not know that I was being sued. literally, legally, that's what's happening. But anyway, I think back on the times before that, from the beginning.
Yeah,
because that too is a loss. You know, and people grieve, you know, over the dissolution of relationships, whether they're under contract by marriage or friendships, best friends, whatever the case may be. We have that process. I like the phrase you used, lean into it, because we do. We're going to go through it one way or the other. We're either going to go through it willingly, consciously, or it's going to manifest in ways in which we probably would rather not have it. It'll come out in other ways.
That's right.
And we'd really like to avoid that if we can. So I think that's very cool. Well, we're going to talk more about that as we continue talking with the author, Dr. Roger Teel of This Life is Joy, Discovering the Spiritual Laws to Life More Powerfully, Lovingly, and Happily here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Today, we're talking with Dr. Roger Teel. He's the author of This Life is Joy. We look forward to you picking up a copy, going to his website, rogerteel.com. You know, it's also very interesting when we start talking about the spiritual life. And you know, as I've gone through my life, and I've come in contact with a number of different people, they have their philosophy that they hold dear and near and dear to them, and yet they're also willing to step outside that box, if you will, outside those nine dots of that philosophical principle that they've maybe lived by or that they were born and raised into, and they start looking at things differently. And I have to I happen to wear a hat. Most of the time, I literally take my hat off to them, as well as metaphorically, and acknowledge the fact that, my goodness, in spite of the fact that you still adhere to many of the tenets of that philosophy, you're willing to step out and say, you know what, I need to test the waters and see, is this mine? Matter of fact, there was a gentleman I interviewed many years ago by the name of John Fisher. He was a Christian musician in the 70s and 80s, and he grew up in what he referred to as the Jesus Movement in California. And he had written this book, and we were talking about it in the context of our conversation. And he says, you know, I moved to New England with my wife and family, and I'm sitting there in my writer's garret looking out the bay window at the falling leaves, the autumn leaves and everything. And he asked himself this question, which I thought was pretty profound. Is what I believe, what I've been taught and or told to believe, or is it what I believe? In other words, are these mine or do these belong to someone else? And I thought that is like, wow, you know, because not many people are going to ask that question and do a sort of a self-evaluation of saying, wait, is this mine? And it's kind of hard not to have some of these things be yours in the sense that or someone else's, because we're influenced by everybody around us, right? You know,
well, especially we're imprinted in our earliest years.
Yeah.
Psychologists have estimated that a good 80% of our internal programming is accomplished by no later than age 5. Somewhere between 3 and 5, the basic patterns are set. And I think of that and I think, oh my God, a 5-year-old's running my life. But, you know, I think that that's one of the healthiest things to step back and explore. You see, I believe that every one of us has a pipeline to truth. And I believe that when we accomplish the opening of our hearts, we really experience God in a very personal way, beyond doctrines and dogmas and religions. We have a direct experience of the divine. That's what I had when I finally was supported in opening my heart. And then what we can do is we can listen deeply and we can explore with a fresh mind. Now, I know a whole lot of religions don't want people doing that, which is why they try to vest the power in the church and actually fill people with a whole lot of fear, lest they start doubting and exploring and questioning. And yet, you know, one spiritual anchoring is the most precious gift there is. And I tell you what, it's got to go beyond just simply dogmatic beliefs. It's got to go to some level of experience when the times get tough. And that's why this book is all about having a vital firsthand experience of everyone's spiritual magnificence and the joy that is in everyone, the power that is in everyone, and everyone's having a direct pipeline to the divine mind, to the infinite love. So, you know, there are a growing number of individuals who are, like the writer you're talking about, tapping into their true self-reliance and beginning to quest beyond what the givens are out there. It's all been available, and there have been a whole lot of enlightened masters throughout the ages who've given us hints, so we don't have to go it alone, as it were. We can use this. And, you know, I'm a minister of something of a non-traditional approach, and in fact, our path draws from the deep wisdom of all the faiths, not just one, of all the faiths, and tries to bring that forth then in as a practical spirituality for people to live by day by day. And so it really helps people reclaim their spiritual integrity in their life. And in fact, some who have studied this stuff actually go back to their former faiths and understand them better. But some just claim what we're about as their new path. But it's always vested for us in the individual. You have a direct pipeline to God, and the church need not be your intermediary. Now, of course, if you want to believe that it is, that's fine. That's you believe what you want to believe.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things that you said earlier in terms of our self-value, and I remember questioning this during especially the early mid-80s, because I kept hearing this message about how we were nothing but lowly worms. And we were just, and I thought, wait a minute, as far as the Christian message goes, I thought, this just doesn't make any sense. I mean, all right, we can go down the road to the sacrifice that was made. Again, this is under the theological aspects of the philosophy of Christianity. If we have no value, then the sacrifice means absolutely nothing. And so this is just my own musings. It was like, wait a minute, we must have incredible, priceless value. Otherwise, the sacrifice that was made, that was why it was made, because we had value. That was the thing that really struck me, and I just kind of had to reject, you know, that other aspect of it. It just didn't make any sense to me.
Well, that's what the master teacher saw in people. He would go to the most despised and lowly of the people around him and see their glory, see their beauty. And that's what was transforming to them. They were loved for who they really were, and all of the stigmas placed upon them by the society of the day. He said, "That's nonsense. You are God's child, you know, and I see your light. I see who you really are."
Yeah.
But you see, the doctrine of original sin was not Jesus' teaching. That was an invention of the church in the 3rd century. Later, St. Augustine confirmed it later. Or not St. Augustine, but the ruler Augustine confirmed it later. And so it's you know, there are original master teachers, and then the institutions form around them and oftentimes skew the very teaching itself. So the Christianity of today has become a fall redemption theology, basically.
Yeah.
But there are many who believe that that was not the original intention and message of Jesus. In fact, I read an interesting study here recently by some art anthropologists who have studied the art and the stained glass in the earliest Christian churches. And what they noticed is that in the churches before 1000 A.D., from the death of Jesus up to about 1000 A.D., those churches had no images of the sacrifice and the crucifixion of Jesus. They had mostly pastoral images of Jesus with the children, Jesus with the flocks, Jesus with the people. Mm. And it was only from about 1000 A.D. onward that the churches started having the crucifix and the Jesus nailed to the cross. And basically what these anthropologists are suggesting is that the original intent that is depicted in the art of Jesus was the creation of paradise now. That great teacher wanted to show us how, by opening up to our love, our highest childlike qualities, and loving God and our neighbor and ourselves, that we could create paradise on earth. right here. He said the kingdom of heaven is at hand, not later in another life. It's at hand.
Right.
And he said it's within you. He said it's within you. And that he was a teacher of the paradise, and then only later did the theology skew over to focus upon his death. So, you know, and people are welcome to believe whatever they want to believe, but they may want to do some deep searching and learn how the Bible got put together, learn how all of this theology was developed.
Yeah, it's along the lines of the analogy of you have a home, you have a home base. I have one presently. It's where you live, it's where you sleep and eat, and you gather whatever animals you choose to have as pets at your home and this kind of thing. And then there are times when, hopefully more than just once a year, you venture hopefully far away from that home to explore other places, you know, other locales. My wife and I sojourned to Yosemite. I've never been to Yosemite. Sojourned to a place called Nevada City and a small community north thereof and the Redwoods, and had an opportunity to drive over the San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge, which, again, I've never been to. I mean, the farthest north in California I've ever been as far as driving and traveling is a place called Cambria along the coastline.
Uh-huh.
But we do that to have new experiences, and then we end up going back to the home base.
That's right.
So from a spiritual standpoint, I think it would behoove all of us to do that from time to time, to venture out. You can always go home again. You can always go back to where you feel comfortable, where the philosophy, the beliefs that you had, you can always go back there. And you can reject what you've researched. That's okay. I sometimes say, doctor, on this program, that usually at the end of the program, that once you've heard this program, it's too late. You've already heard it. Now you have to deal with it. And and someone said to me, you know, that's a little harsh. You know, in one sense, that's a little that's kind of mean. And I didn't mean it that way. My point is that there are so many different ideas out there. So many different ways of solving problems or vacationing. Then this is part of the analogy that I had to use to move forward in my own spiritual process back in the 80s and early 90s, was it doesn't make any sense that there are all these different foods that we can try and eat and drink and different places we can vacation and different places we can live and different people. You know, now it's 7.5-8 billion that we could get to know, and there's only one way to God? That right. Seems so inconsistent, so illogical to me. So that's when, at the age of 17, I began my search, and I haven't stopped.
I think that's so powerful that you are, because it's deepening you. And, you know, we do a tremendous amount of interfaith work here. We have a huge congregation, upwards of 30,000 and a 1,500 seat sanctuary. And we brought in the Sufis for an evening and filled the place as people enjoyed the whirling dervishes and an expression of Sufism. We've had a Celtic spirituality night equally. But we recently had the first Sikh service in all of North America outside of a Sikh temple. And the Sikhs brought over their sacred writings, and they put on a whole service, and it deepens the people there. They're ensconced in our teaching, and yet they're enriched by all of that. And it reminds me of that phrase, I'm forgetting in the moment who said it, but it's we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time.
I like that.
I was reminded of that when you did that beautiful sharing about you can always go out and explore, but you can always come home.
Yeah.
But you might find that when you come home, you know it a new way because of your exploring.
I remember having a bit of a conversation with my eldest sister one day, and it was a mistake on my part to have the conversation where I had it and when I had it, but I had it anyway. This was at Thanksgiving in the kitchen before as the meal is being prepared. And she was of a particular philosophy that was, from my observations perspectives, was rather rigid and closed. But I told her, I says, you know, my beliefs of yesterday are not my beliefs of today, are not my beliefs of tomorrow, because I'm always exploring and I'm always experiencing and I'm reading and I'm watching and I'm listening. How can my beliefs of today be those of yesterday if I have, you know, actually been living my life and communing with people and getting to know them? And I have to say, one of the struggles that I have, especially, and I'm going to venture, there are a lot of people who feel this way. In this day and age in which you and I live, Doctor, if either of us was to begin to do a research, a genuine questioning for the sake of wanting to know the ins and outs, the philosophical depths of the Muslim faith, a red light's going to go on at the NSA or somewhere that is going to say, oh my gosh, here's someone who might become radicalized. I have no interest in that. I want to know what the philosophy is. I want to know what the teachings are. Because what little I know from the Quran talks about Muslims of the faith who are supposed to protect the people of the book. And those people of the book, those were the people who were following Jesus, if the translation's correct and my information is correct. And it's like, wow, how many people have read that? Now, I don't know, again, I don't know if my information's accurate, Doc, but all I know is that without some kind of research into some, I envy you the experiences you've had with these folks in your church of the different philosophies, Celtic and Sikh and Sufi and so forth. I mean, that must have been incredible.
Well, it is. And the beautiful thing about it is that we all got to learn and dispel a bunch of misconceptions and then become friends. Mm. And if you look at the travails across the planet, the messes we humans are making, you got to wonder as if at a grassroots level, we were all to begin to do this, really get to know one another, make some friendships, and then start learning and listening to one another.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said listening to one another. You know, things would shift.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I'm not alone in the idea that the kind of healing of human affairs on this planet are not going to be brought about by governments. That probably won't come about by the mega religions of the world or any other kinds of systems. It's going to be a grassroots kind of awakening to another way of understanding oneself and one's fellow human being that begins to transform things. Because here's how I see it. You know, that most individuals are anchored in the ego. And the aspect of the ego is convinced of its own inadequacy and fear. The ego is established in inadequacy and fear. And so the ego is always seeking to protect, always perceiving the other as alien and hostile. And the biggest thing is that the ego defends against love. And I discovered this on my own path, that there was a part of me, even though I was a loving minister, I didn't have my heart open because I was afraid of love. And then I got over that and opened my heart and discovered, oh my God, life is entirely different. Until we realize that we're fear-based beings, then our whole life is going to call in all manner of stuff. And our life, we're just going to sink. And so when I say this life is joy, I'm saying we can have it anyway. We can continue our own personal misery by being fear-based individuals, or we can discover our real power, which is love and is the heart. And we can reclaim our joy, and we can give up the notion that being powerful in the world or having a bunch of money or whatever is going to make us happy, and discover a joy that doesn't need any of that and can go ahead and create all of it if it wants.
Yeah.
And then we can start bringing peace to our world because we're finding peace within ourselves.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about the outward trappings of happiness and joy and so forth, which they are. They're traps is really what they are. I remember when The Secret came out and focusing on the law of attraction. And I remember I was doing an interview with somebody. And we were touching upon that, and they said, "Oh yeah, well they left something out." I said, "Really? I'm surprised." Well, it's shocking that someone would leave something out that would be sort of a key that would, if you turn that key, boom, you know, the floodgates would open. But one of the things that they that was said that they left out was that you need to get in touch with your, shall we say, higher self, or that still small voice, to determine whether or not these outward things that you want to attract to yourself, like cars and money and homes and this and that and the other, are in your best interest, are part of your life's purpose.
That's right. What appeals to people in The Secret is to get more of that stuff that they think they need to be happy.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing wrong with the law, understanding the law of attraction.
Sure.
It is a real force in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But to think that using it to get all of this whatever is going to really fundamentally fulfill them or fulfill their life is erroneous. So to get in touch with your wholeness now, to go beyond the ego and become a spiritually centered being, awakening to your innate spirituality, then all your values shift. And what you go after with the law of attraction is of a higher order. And in many cases, people go after serving more rather than getting more, because they've healed this sense that they're an empty hole trying to be filled by all of this stuff.
Yeah.
They're not hollow beings. They're full beings. You discover your fullness, and all of the stuff you thought you needed, you think, who cares? Why fiddle around with that?
And there's also
something even more value.
Right, exactly. And there's another element to that. A lot of people don't think of it in this context. I know you're familiar with the television programs focusing on this disorder they refer to in regards to hoarding.
Yes.
And I remember when you heard the 99%ers getting out there and complaining about the 1%ers and so forth, you know, and I thought, well, okay, hoarding is where you gather more and more and more, and you put it into spaces and you fill it up, and then you get another space and you fill it up and so forth. Well, you know what? The 1%ers are doing the same thing. They're hoarding, only it may not necessarily be stuff. It may be, well, although I suppose money is, but they're hoarding money. They're putting millions and millions and millions and millions and billions of dollars into their bank accounts, and it's going nowhere. And I'm sure you would agree with this, all of this stuff needs to flow. It needs to come in,
yes,
stay for a little while, and go out.
Absolutely right. And that is true abundance, by the way, because everything, the hoarding, is fear-based. And you're not an abundant person if your life is run by some level or degree of fear. And so to move out of fear, you have to open your heart and discover that who you are is love. That this instant is love. That's the title of the first chapter. This instant is love.
Mm.
And that you are whole already, and whoever told you you weren't enough was lying, and they didn't know themselves probably, which is why they couldn't tell you the truth. And now you get to live in a whole different way. You get to respect yourself, not doubt yourself. You get to listen within. You get to connect with your source within yourself. You get to go forth to do what you want to do. But you see, here's the other thing, Richard. There's a whole lot of merchandisers and systems out there that don't want you to know that you're whole and complete now. Mm. They want us to stay in fear so they can sell us the antidote, so they can manipulate us,
yeah,
and sell us what they think is the antidote to that. They don't want people to get joyous, because then the people get independent. They get self-reliant. They're not as needy. And so they lose their leverage. So that's why you don't hear a whole lot of talk about this.
Yeah. I was joking with a gentleman the other day about television and how it's changed and everything. And I'm all for choices. I'm all for having choices and as many choices as you can find, although there comes a point when you get overwhelmed by choices and don't know what to choose because there are too many. But I said, you know, there are times when I wish we'd go back to the three major networks, okay? And even black and white. I don't care necessarily about the color. And he says, well, how about just one, just like in the Soviet Union? They only have one channel. I said, well, I don't know if I want to go quite that far. But sometimes it just seems as though there are too many choices. There's too much to choose from. And then, of course, you know, everybody's asking you, hey, have you upgraded to the latest this or that or the other? And sometimes you have to be in order to keep up. You know, for example, I am still running a computer that is 10 years old, that is still running Windows XP. I don't know how much longer that's going to happen and that's going to work. But
you're living on the edge there.
Well, let me tell you something. I was running Windows 95 until 2004. So, but it's like, why do I have to, you know, it's almost like, you know, I know that the horse and buggy went sort of by the wayside when the automobile came along, the internal combustion engine and so forth and so on, but it hasn't died out completely. And I also know, too, that there's going to come a point when we're all going to be driving hybrids or electric cars. So the internal combustion engine is also going to go, you know, by the wayside, except for maybe collectors or somebody's got a thing rusting in their backyard or something. But it just seems as though I'm curious, from a spiritual standpoint, is there the latest and greatest? Is there an upgrade that we need to take on? Or is it as it always has been and always will be? We just need to tap into it.
Yeah, I think that the latter is the case, that really what we're being called to is to not just have our spiritual lives be either an afterthought or a once a week kind of a deal, but that we really start entering into some spiritual practices that keep us awake and not asleep, that exit us from the trance that so many people are in, that they're separate beings, they're egos, they're fearful, that life is dangerous and all of this kind of stuff. And really start becoming still more. I'm a big fan of meditation. I lead meditation retreats, and I have seen people detoxify so effectively and overcome so much pressure and stress and old ideas and have breakthroughs and healings. There's so much that's available, but and quite frankly, I think that a whole lot of people are now really ready, because more and more it becomes apparent that our former values just aren't flying.
Yeah.
And people want joy. They want joy.
Let me ask you a question as the spiritual director, as well as the senior minister at the Mile High Church. And I take it that's in Colorado.
In Denver, yeah.
In Denver. Jesus said to his disciples at one point, when he was sort of being queried about all of these things that he was doing, making water into wine and raising Lazarus from the dead and all of these different things. And I paraphrase here. He says to them, well, hey, you know, this is no big deal. You guys can do this, but you guys are going to do this. But even greater things you are going to do. Let me ask you, as the senior minister, what are those greater things that he and other philosophies speak of that we can do and maybe in one sense should be doing today?
I believe that we are all centers in the divine mind. And when we awaken, as Jesus was trying to get us to do, we begin to realize that we can access genius, that healing ideas, breakthrough ideas are available to us all, as well as expanded capacities. I believe he was trying to initiate us into the healing energies. And in fact, the disciples healed around him as long as he was around, and even for a while after he left, until they got pulled back into the lower vibrations. And so he was trying to help us realize that we could be channels for God. We could be instruments of God. We could heal. We could have breakthrough ideas. We could come together and create power. I mean, I think the whole universe of possibilities is available. But when we stay stuck in the fearful ego, we only access a very narrow bandwidth of ideas and possibilities. And so you are so right. He said, the things that I have done shall you do, and even greater things shall you do.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to teach us who we are, not just to worship him from afar, but to become like him. He said, follow me.
Yeah.
He said, live with an open heart. Know, love your neighbor and love God and create paradise now.
I remember going back to the conversation we had just a little bit ago regarding a personal value, a value of the human being. And I remember the passage where it speaks to be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I heard that, and I hadn't thought about it for a long time. And then all of a sudden it came back to mind, and I got to thinking about it in terms of this whole aspect of, you know, it is appointed for every man once to die and then the judgment, you know, and, you know, either going to heaven or hell, either or, and so forth. And I got to thinking about that in terms of, you know, good and bad, right and wrong, good and evil, and so forth. And then I did a little research, And what I found was, rightly or wrongly, correctly or incorrectly, was that word perfect had nothing to do with right or wrong. It had to do with just being who you are right now.
Yeah, a better translation of the word, and the Bible is full of mistranslations, but the better translation is whole.
Yes.
Be ye whole.
Yeah.
As the Spirit of God in you is whole.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was trying to say.
Yeah.
Meaning, come out of the sense that you're flawed and not good enough. Be whole. Be in integrity with you. Be you, as you are saying. Trust yourself. And let, because, you know, we're all here to be unique expressions of God.
Yeah.
It's not that we all should cookie cutter one another and demand everybody always live and believe and think and create the same way. You know, obviously, we've all been created by God. God must have just love diversity and uniqueness and richness.
Mm-hmm. That's why he could have cut it cookie-cuttered trees, and yet, within a one square block or smaller, if you've got multiple trees, no two trees, even if they're the same species, even if it's two oak trees, those two oak trees aren't even close to identical to each other.
That's right. And so the universe loves to celebrate uniqueness. And everybody listening to this, you and I, we are all the way the universe, the divine, is seeking to enjoy itself. And so I ask everybody, are you showing God a good time?
Hmm.
You know?
I like that. That's good. Are you showing God a good time?
Yeah. I mean, are you just, you know, groveling around in misery and feeling worthless and squelching your joy? What if you were here to be a dynamic celebration of life, and the only thing holding you back is a bunch of erroneous conclusions and belief systems and a lot of programming from other unhappy people? What if you're a dynamic free being right now, and you just need to own it and then live a new way, take some risks, reinvent yourself?
Well, it's really interesting. And before we wrap up here, and I'm going to have to cut this short, let me just ask you, first of all, if you're coming off a mile high there, we'd love to have you here in Santa Barbara to continue our conversation.
Hey, I love Santa Barbara, by the way. Maybe you know Barbara Fields there.
I've heard the name. Yeah. Well, very good.
Barbara Marks Hubbard.
Yeah, I've had her on the program as well. I had her on the program. Before I let you go, I have three quick questions I want to ask you. And then, again, I want to thank you so much for your time and energy and appreciate what you're doing. And we hope to have you on the program again. First question is, who is Roger Teal?
Well, Roger Teal is a child of God. He's a unique expression of the divine, and he's a lot of fun.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I intend to continue to awaken personally and to share whatever light and healing energy I can with other human beings.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life purpose is to express God and to be true to my deepest nature.
Dr. Teal, I want to thank you again for joining us on the program. And a reminder that the book is called This Life is Joy. And go to the website, rogerteal.com. And Roger, again, thank you so much for joining us. Roger?
It's a pleasure, Richard.
Wonderful.
Yes.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.